Hour two of the Bible study. Paul Clayton sitting in for vacationing Chuck Rathard. It's your opportunity to ask the pastor. Phones open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Joining us from Mattoon, Illinois, Pastor Bruce Osborne. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Paul. How are you today,
sir? Doing great. Good to hear your smiling voice. We're ready to go here. Phones open.
Sounds great.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. How much snow over the weekend in your neck of the woods?
Actually, none. We were in that line that was just south of where all the snow came. So we were very blessed. I guess some people just got blessed with snow. So we were just blessed with cold and wind and rain.
We had just enough for it to look pretty, in juxtaposition to the spring flowers and buds on the trees and everything. Absolutely. Well, I've got a story here for you to react to.
Okay.
Over half of Americans say they would visit a church if they receive a personal invitation from a family member, friend, or neighbor, according to a new study by Lifeway Research. They found that people are most willing to hear about a local congregation through a family member, some 63%, and through a friend or neighbor from the church, 56%. Less than half are open to receive information about a church any other way, such as through an advertisement. The head of the North American Mission Board for Evangelization at Lifeway, Ken Weathersby, said, "We want to help Christians discover what approaches work best in today's culture. It's not about changing the gospel, but determining how best to share it." The findings are released as the nation's largest churches are experiencing membership decline. The Southern Baptist Convention reported a 0.24% drop in total membership in 2007. That's the first dip in years for the largest Protestant denomination in the country. During the SBC's annual meeting last June, then-President Frank Page acknowledged that the passion for reaching the lost may be there, but there is a disconnect between churches and the denomination and the culture today. He said, "Many of our people simply do not know how to relate to people in 21st century culture and have been frustrated at their inability to communicate the gospel." He said, "Many believers do not know people who are outside the kingdom and often do not know their own neighbors." The North American Mission Board, SBC's domestic mission agency, introduced a multifaceted, flexible evangelism strategy called God's Plan for Sharing that summer and plans to launch it in 2010. It's being launched in four languages. Sounds a little like our Ablaze program. They said to help guide the GPS campaign, the mission agency commissioned Lifeway to do a survey and find the most effective ways of sharing Christ. So anyway, Pastor, what they discovered is that most people are willing to hear about a local congregation through family, through someone they trust or know very well.
And I would reiterate that. I read that. I think I read it in a online newspaper. I think I read it somewhere on like USA Today or something like that. And I have been a huge proponent for years, as have many pastors, of when we preach about evangelism, it's important for people to remember. The studies that I remember reading about were, you know, when you go out, let's say, canvass a neighborhood, we all feel good about going out and knocking on doors and inviting people to church. If you were to get a 10% response to something like that, you have done phenomenally well. And we forget that, you know, when Christ gave the command to his disciples, "Go, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to observe everything I have commanded you, and surely I will be with you always to the very end of the age." That great commission was to each and every Christian in this world. And what we're simply seeing is, gee, if we do what Jesus tells us to do, it works. If we as family, if we would see ourselves as brothers and sisters in Christ and each take it upon ourselves to share that good news of what Jesus Christ, you don't have to be a theologian, Paul. You don't have to be even the best speaker. All you simply have to be is willing to let the Holy Spirit use you in the way that he's going to choose.
It also sounds like you don't have to throw all kinds of money at evangelism.
No.
If you can get the locals, the people right here to network in their own backyard.
Yes, that's exactly. exactly right. I remember having a conversation with Dr. Al Berry, who is our sainted president of the Missouri Synod. And he, I met him first when I was a very young pastor. I was brand new, serving a dual parish, one in Iowa and one in Illinois. And he happened to be the district president of Iowa East, I believe, at that point. And he came to visit me and my wife, and just came in, and we just had a wonderful about a 2-hour conversation in our home. He drove all the way down to visit us in Keokuk, Iowa. I remember something that he encouraged me to do, and it was something that he personally made a commitment to do. And it was, I will not go to bed any night without sharing my faith first with one person that I do not know.
Well, it seems that the people closest to us are generally the most reluctant to follow us.
Yeah.
And Jesus experienced that in his own hometown.
You bet. You bet. And so this is, you know, in a sense, a working with that and saying, you know, it's not just the people you don't know. We probably all have people in our families who we don't know. Or that don't know Christ, and it is hard. But if you think about that automatic tie you got in with somebody, I mean, if you just think of how, you know, Jesus told the disciples, you know, do it again in Jerusalem, and then, you know, and it's like these small circles. You start with your inner sanctum, and you work out from there. Yeah, it is hard. I mean, I've got family members who, I'm not sure where they stand with their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And so it's important for me to take those opportunities that God gives me to shine brightly with the light of Christ in their lives. So they know, and I need to take the opportunity and encourage them to find a church. It's a little different being a pastor and meeting people out of town, but you know, Paul, think about our neighbors, think about our friends, the people we've already got a relationship with. It really boils down to this. What's more important, my earthly relationship with them or my heavenly relationship with God? And, you know, if I really love those people, am I not going to want to know that I'm going to see them for all eternity as well?
Do ceremonies give you the greatest opportunity for evangelism as a pastor? And I'm talking about funerals, presiding over a wedding, and hospital visits.
For me as a pastor, there are a couple of opportunities that I have that rival those, yes. If you're talking just general public opportunities to do something, yes. Weddings, funerals, hospital calls are a wonderful opportunity for pastors to share the good news of Jesus Christ with a crowd that you know there would probably be at least one or two who might have heard the message, but it has yet to take root.
And in those situations, you've got a somewhat captive audience.
Exactly. Most people aren't going to walk out on me. You know, and so what I try to do is take every opportunity that I can, whether it be a wedding or a funeral or a hospital call, to make visits and to take the opportunity to share that gospel in a nutshell, that John 3:16 mentality that says, I don't have the opportunity, at least at every wedding and every funeral, to go into a long dissertation on the ills of our world and how we need Jesus and all of those things. But it's an opportunity to share boldly the fact of sin and the fact of salvation. Mm. And whether that be in 2 minutes, whether that be in 3 minutes, 5 minutes, whether that be in a simple 30-second prayer that I can have at the bedside with somebody. But I think sometimes we also need to see those opportunities that extend past that. Maybe it's a family member you're visiting in the hospital and the person at the bedside next to you. You don't even have to know who that person is, but include that person in the prayer.
Mm-hmm.
When you pray for that person. Myself, I look at, here I am in Mattoon, and I look at it and say, well, how can I help our community? So I serve on our local Chamber of Commerce. I also am a volunteer chaplain out at our local hospital, and I try to do things that put me into the community so I have an opportunity to then meet other people who I might not normally ever meet. But it gives me an opportunity to share with them, whether it be through word or it be through deed, the love of Jesus Christ.
So you need to be intentional about going beyond the tribe. So
oh, yes, very much so. I tell people this all the time from the pulpit. I said, too many times we think that pastors make the best evangelists. I said, we don't. I said, because if you think about who I spend 90% of my time with, it's the tribe.
Yeah.
It's you folks. I said, I am blessed. I said, everybody thinks, oh, the pastor's life must be so hard. I said, and there are difficult days. I said, I'm not trying to demean that side of it. But I said, folks, it's you folks who leave from sitting in the pew that really are on the front lines when it comes to facing the ills of this world. I said, I deal with you when you need me. I said, but most of the people I deal with, we share a common faith. I said, when you go into your workplace, I said, you're not dealing with people who have a common faith. You're dealing with people who, for many of them, truly, truly have no hope.
Pastor, the Baptist church in my neighborhood is going to present the movie Fireproof and is inviting the public to come. And perhaps outreach efforts like that are an entry point for those people that feel comfortable with us to talk about a congregation. Maybe that's a good place to start. They may be stiff-necked about coming to a Sunday worship service, but might go with you to a social event like
oh,
that.
Oh, you betcha, brother. I just got done talking not a half an hour ago, Paul, with a gentleman who was having that conversation with another family member who... This member made the statement that, you know, while we might not like some of the things that are coming down the pike, meaning they were lamenting the way the church has changed, and this person made the statement, you know, he says, I might not like all the changes either, but isn't the point to bring people into a relationship with Jesus Christ? And this person said, no, it's not. That's not the point of the church. And you know, it was kind of a shocking thing to hear that there are actually people out there who don't see the church's mission as facilitating that relationship between God and man. But isn't that what making a disciple is? Isn't that what sharing the good news is? I've often said, Paul, whatever it takes to get somebody in the door, it can't be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. So you know? If they're not going to come to where you are, you need to go to where they are.
Exactly. Exactly.
And didn't Paul say that?
I think another Paul said that as well. And you know, for example, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to have the Fireproof movie here as well.
Are you?
And I mean, what a wonderful opportunity that is to put on the outside marquee, to put in the newspaper, hey, free movie. Uh-huh. Anybody want to come? A movie to strengthen your marriage. Come and see this movie. And I mean, but what an opportunity, what an outreach, because you're exactly right, Paul. I mean, I'm in a community where churches are still very well respected. We have, though, a big, beautiful church, but it is a Gothic-style church. It's long and narrow, and it's got the beautiful stained glass windows, and it's very awesome in the best sense of that. But as awesome as it might be for you and I to walk in who grew up going to church, for people who didn't grow up going to church, they might walk in and go, oh, this just kind of feels creepy.
Oh, this is old school.
Exactly.
Or should we say old church?
Exactly. And so that might be a stumbling block for them. Well, but if they can come into our fellowship hall and watch it on the big screen, the big projector that's going to, you know, put a 15-foot picture up there on the wall or whatever it's going to be, and if they can meet a lot of the wonderful people who call St. John's home and also meet a lot of other wonderful people in the community and see, you know what, we're all on the same page. Mm. It's all about God strengthening us, and if this movie can find the chink in their armor to get them to walk in, and then the Holy Spirit's going to use that, well, praise the Lord for that.
Let's go to the phones. Bill has a question for you. Phones are open at 505-7850 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Bill.
Hi, good morning to both of you. This might be sound half-baked, but what do you think of this idea? People may be passing out in their neighborhoods KFUO schedules of the programs on KFUO with the Bible studies and the law and gospel and different things on there. And, leaving, at people's homes maybe, or maybe be able to get permission from certain businesses to put this in.
You've got a good idea. What we need to do is create a PDF flyer that anybody could download and print and deliver to somebody they know.
Yep.
And then here's another idea. I don't know if it's possible, but, there's a lot of people out there. They have family members who may be physically impaired. They may have they may be blind, or there's someone who wants to learn a new language or something like that, and the brochures could be put out by Lutheran Braille publishers, and in that brochure they could also have the gospel in their message in those brochures, and maybe even like the language, people are always interested in language, might have something to say on there like, are you interested in learning new language? See how Lutheran Bible translators do this, and insider tell about the Bible translators, and maybe even put a little bit of the gospel in there. And, get permission to distribute these, maybe in some business and that, just like, the Gideons, they put their Bibles in hotels and everything. But, the Seventh-day Adventists, they do stuff like that. They put out these little things out in doctor's office and different things about children's books and different literature and that, and maybe that would work, in our case. But you have to do it with respect and get permission to do this. I'll hang up and see what you have to say about it.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Some good ideas there.
Yeah, well, Bill, if those are half-baked, we need a whole lot more half-baked ideas, brother.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you. I mean, we need to think outside the box when it comes to how to share the good news of Jesus Christ. Because our culture, I mean, I just think about, I remember a conversation I had with my father probably when I was 6 years old. And I was born in a little suburb outside of Detroit, Michigan. And we left when I was six, so it couldn't have been long after I left. And there was a huge department store called Federal's Department Store. And this was one of those kind of like a big Macy's in downtown New York. I mean, it was a huge self-standing building that was four stories tall. And my dad said, son, I want to tell you something. And this was like a couple of years before this, we had a national election. And he said, son, that was the first election that they actually, in the state of Michigan, counted the ballots by computer. And he said, the computer filled one whole floor of that building. And he says, all it could do was count ballots. I mean, can you imagine a computer the size of the floor of an entire building, and all it could do was count ballots? Well, Paul, I know for a fact that you're sitting inside a studio, that your computer system does not take up the entire floor of your building.
No, it doesn't.
But it can do a whole lot more than just count ballots. I mean, you've got at least two screens you're looking at right now, maybe three, and you've got information at our fingertips that is just phenomenal. The life-changing things that have happened in this world just in the last 30 or 40 years have been phenomenal. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this message that we have to share never changes. It's the one thing that will not change, the message of salvation found only in Jesus Christ. But, didn't God give us a lot of this technology so we can use this technology to get his good news out to different people and people who speak different languages and people who can't read or people who can't hear or people who can't understand certain things? What a gift all of these different ways and technology have given us to share the good news. And we need to be able to think outside the box and come up with some half-baked ideas to say, all right,
what's a new way? What's a way that me, as an individual Christian, can get this good news out to my friends and neighbors, maybe in a little different way? And it might be something as simple as a KFUO bookmark, and I'm looking at a stack still of about 20 that I have left over from Share-a-thon last year when I participated, and I still hand out every Bible, every catechism I give out, I put in a KFUO bookmark for the simple reason, KFUO, you can get it around the world. You're on the web. People are listening to us right now through their computers.
Plus, we're very non-threatening.
You are, because you know what? You can always click it off the computer. And it's one of those things, Paul, that I don't think we think about those things all the time, and we need to change our way of thinking. What are some ways? Because you know what? You guys are very non-threatening. When you're listening to you, or we're talking to Diane, or it's Chuck, or it's Roland, whoever it happens to be, you know what? You guys aren't in your face with it all the time. Now, there's a time to be in your face, and there's a time just to kick back and have a little fun and show people that while doctrine is important, and while that is the facts and the foundation of our faith is Christ, you know what? We can also laugh. We can also just have a good time as well.
So perhaps this economy is offering opportunities for evangelism as well. Now, I don't know what the economy is like there in Mattoon. How are you folks holding up?
We're okay. We have, over the past couple of years, we've lost a couple of our big employers. We've had a couple of the plants do mandatory shutdowns, which means they've gone from 3 shifts a day, 7 days a week, to 3 shifts a day, 5 days a week. And so we've seen everybody kind of lose, you know, maybe 4 hours here, 8 hours here. We're very thankful that most people still have jobs in our area. And so our unemployment rate isn't probably that far off what the national average is. We're nowhere near our brothers and sisters in Christ up in Detroit and many other places who have lost huge amounts of jobs. And boy, I feel for those people, because that is a thankless, you know, position to be in. Hard to talk to people who have just lost the job maybe they've had for 25 years, thinking, you know, hey, this is my life, and all of a sudden to have that taken out from under you. But what a way now we have to share with them the reminder of what really is the foundation. It's Jesus Christ, and it's what he's done for them. Mm-hmm. And what a neat way, opportunity we have to share that peace with them.
There's a lot of people out there hurting because they anticipate unfulfilled expectations.
Yes, very much so. Because you know what? I mean, it used to be, I remember the days when it used to be, you know, if you worked for a company like John Deere, or you worked for a company like IBM, or you worked for any of those big-name companies, you had a job for life. They were going to be loyal to you, and you were going to be loyal to them. But our economy has so changed. And, you know, for a lot of people, their idea is, well, they're not going to be loyal to me, so the first chance I get to get a better job and get more money, I'm going to leave them, too. Loyalty doesn't mean anything to people anymore. A handshake doesn't mean anything. Sadly, even a contract doesn't mean anything to a lot of people anymore. But, you know, God's contract, God's covenant with us, boy, it does mean something, and it's worth a lot, because it was written in the blood of his son, Jesus Christ. And that's where we could really put all our faith into.
When we come back from our break, we're going to talk about this article that appears in USA Today this morning that states more people are going to church for help. 2 in 3 pastors fielding requests from people outside the congregation. And we'll tell you how some churches are adapting to that when we come back on Ask the Pastor. Phones open between you and Pastor Bruce Osborne at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Come on in.
AM850 KFUO celebrating 85 years of proclaiming the gospel and touching lives.
This is Bernice Lang from Williamsburg, Missouri. And I remember as a kid, my folks always listened to KFUO, but we were not Lutherans. But we always went to the Evangelical Reformed Church. But anyway, on Saturday afternoon about 12:30, this young girl named Loretta used to always say when she'd get to heaven, she would like to see someone say, "It was you who invited me here." And that always stuck with me as a child, and I really appreciate Dr. Dobson. Thank you.
Do you have a story about how AM 850 KFUO touched your life? Call the memory line and record your message. 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172, the AM 850 KFUO memory line.
The toughest bug on earth, next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Sometimes it seems as if God made some creatures just to show us he could do the impossible. Many of these creatures, by their strange nature, offer direct challenges to evolutionary theory. One such creature is a bacterium that has been labeled the toughest bug on earth. Its Latin name means strange berry that withstands radiation. It can withstand thousands of times the level of radiation that would kill a human. The bacterium was first isolated in the 1950s, but a scientist who began studying the bug in 1988 said, quote, "I had difficulty believing anything like this could exist." Many bacteria form hard capsules around themselves in response to radiation. While this provides some protection, the strange berry doesn't form a capsule and survives better than any other bug. While 500 to 1,000 rads of radiation would kill a human being, the strange berry can withstand 1.5 million rads. The radiation shatters the berry's DNA into hundreds of fragments, 100 times the fragmentation that is fatal to all other bacteria. But a couple of hours later, the DNA is stitched back together, free of all mutations. Evolutionists are puzzled because there is no environment containing this much radiation, so why would evolution develop such a creature? So the strange berry not only challenges evolution directly, but declares the skill and wisdom of its creator.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
A bequest or other estate gift is a wonderful way that you can help support the ministry of AM 850 KFUO Radio long after the Lord calls you home. KFUO staff of gift planning experts can help you understand the process for creating a Christian estate plan and the benefits it offers for you, your family, and the ministries you care about. If you'd like more information, contact Dorothy Kessner at AM 850 KFUO.
AM 850 KFUO has many opportunities available for day sponsors, a great way to support the radio ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. You can become a day sponsor and within the announcements, mark an anniversary, birthday, or other event on the airwaves of AM 850 KFUO. Call Chuck Rathard at 1-888-4-KFUO-AM to discuss a date and get the information necessary to become a day sponsor of AM 850 KFUO.
You've got the Bible study. It's Ask the Pastor. Phone's open to you at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And Pastor Bruce Osborne would love to hear from you. He's in Mattoon, Illinois at St. John's Lutheran Church. Okay, before the break, we told you about this article that appears in USA Today this morning. Pleas for help, spiritual and financial, are apparently flooding U.S. churches from tiny congregations to mega churches. As recession woes seep into the pews, pastors say they're giving out benevolent funds in record numbers, increasing ministries to the unemployed and the financially fearful, even reaching into their own pockets more to help. Nearly 2 in 3 pastors, 62%, report more people from outside their church asking for help, and nearly a third, 31%, see more such requests from church members, according to a survey of 1,000 Protestant pastors by Lifeway Research, a Christian polling firm in Nashville. Now, you said your local economy is not doing that badly. Have you handed anybody money that you didn't recognize?
Well, we have a unique situation here in Mattoon. It was about 5 years ago. All of the local pastors got together with our local Salvation Army. And because we were all being right off the interstate where we are, we're right off Interstate 57, and just north of Effingham, which is where I-70 comes in through Illinois. So we got a lot of people who needed assistance. We also have a homeless shelter in our community that we receive a lot of outside people coming in to stay at our homeless shelter, because you can stay up to 30 days in our homeless shelter for no cost. And so we have a lot of people in our community who have hit a rough road, let's just put it that way. And so all of the churches got together and said, you know, how do we know whether all these people are just coming from church to church and they're kind of, in a sense, making a living.
Making the rounds.
Exactly, going from church to church. There was no good system set up. So what we set up, as most of the churches here in town, not all participated, but what most did is, we said, you know what, instead of us trying to reinvent the wheel, our local Salvation Army has a wonderful program that's already set up. They already have the paperwork. They already have everything. Kind of the wheel has already been invented. And so we said, we approached them and said, would you be willing, if we were willing to send you all our ministerial alliance funds, it's the kind of group that all of us pastors belong to. It's called MAMA here, M-A-M-A, Mattoon Area Ministerial Alliance. If we send you all our money, would you manage and hand it out for us? They said, sure, we'd be happy to. So we every month send money to the Salvation Army for them to put in a special account that is for the Mattoon Area Ministerial Alliance, and then everyone who comes to the individual churches, we send over there. And they do all the paperwork, and they give the money out depending on if they're worthy or not worthy. So they've got all of that. They've got a system set up already. So I don't usually have to deal. Have I seen an increase of people coming in asking for help? Yes. But here I can ship them off to the Salvation Army and tell them, hey, here's my card. You stop by St. John's. Tell them I told you to come. There you go. We've also seen an increase in our members needing help. And so what we have done here is about a year ago, we started what we call our benevolence fund. And we asked for donations from the congregation to help their fellow members. About the first 3 months, we probably raised about $3,000 to have in an account where our associate pastor and our missions committee has set up, you know, an application process and things like that. So if people do need help making ends meet, they can come in, meet with the pastor, fill out this form, and then he can take it anonymously to the committee. They can then vote kind of yay or nay. We've got some maximums, how many times a year you can get help. And we have seen some people who are in need.
Now, it's interesting that you have a connection with the Salvation Army, because quoted in this story is Reverend Larry Klinker of Historic Zion Lutheran Church, ELCA, in New Middleton, Ohio, a parish of 140.
Mm-hmm.
He says, we're going through money a lot faster in terms of helping people with utility bills and shutoffs, and we're seeing people we have never seen before seek help, the pastor said. Zion is a distribution site for the Salvation Army, which at one time gave Zion $5,000 to distribute each year, but now has cut back to $3,500. Klinker says, I spend more time on counseling now. The difference I see between now and the other hard times is that it's more pervasive, and there's a sense of no end in sight this time around. But once again, a connection with the Salvation Army, and I didn't realize churches were doing that.
Well, I think it's because while the Salvation Army, and I want to be clear on this, the Salvation Army is a church on its own. And so the money that we send, just I'm assuming like this Pastor Klinker, Klinker, you know, and I don't want to speak for him, but from our perspective, it's the money that we give does not go into the coffers of the Salvation Army. They just manage the account for the Ministerial Alliance where we are.
They've got the infrastructure
exactly,
to deal with the public.
Exactly, because people are used to going there and getting help. Well, what we've really done is through them, they also have their own money that they can help, so we've kind of given the people one-stop shopping. You know, they can go in there and they can get help not only from the Salvation Army, but they also can get help that they need from them, the Ministerial Alliance. We're not trying to abdicate our responsibility to help people, and I'm not trying to support, in a sense, another church. We're just trying to make it easier on people who need help. That's one of the things that our community has always done well, and it's one of the beautiful things that I love about my community, Mattoon, is we also have what we call the Workforce Development Center, which is a great tool for people who are unemployed. It combines the best of government and local work, and also our community college. It's a place where you can go and apply for your unemployment benefits. It's a place you can go to find out what job openings are out there. It's also a place you can go to find out what programs are available for you to get extra training, so there might be more job opportunities for you. It's a real beautiful way of working together to kind of have the best of all of these things in one place. So the unemployed person isn't driving from place to place. It's kind of like, hey, I got one place I can go and I can get all of this help.
Well, let's talk about a residual benefit, and that deals with public perception and rather high expectations of we church people.
Mm-hmm.
People who are unchurched or are agnostic look to us to respond during times of need like this. They expect us put our faith in action,
mm-hmm.
don't you think?
Oh, very much
and
so.
Is it incumbent upon us to respond?
Yes, it is. Very much so. I mean, these are the times that, I was about to say try men's souls. and it really does. I mean, if you think about it, that poet who wrote that, in that sense, it really is true. People's souls are hurting. It's not just their body, it's their soul. And what an opportunity we have to give them the only salve that can cure that soul, and that salve is the blood of Christ. We can share with them the truth, and it's not a panacea to say, hey, well, just forget about your problems, become a Christian, and everything's going to be okay. It doesn't work like that. But it's a deep and abiding faith that says, you know what? It really is going to be okay. I might struggle. I might hurt. It might not work out the way I want it to. But you know what? In the end, it really is going to be okay.
Those people on the fringe may not share that eternal perspective that you who go to church every week and read the Bible every day have. And I think you have to be sensitive to that, that they're looking for some kind of a temporal benefit from being a Christian.
Right, right. And we need to make sure we are open and honest enough with them to say, this doesn't mean that life is going to get easier for you.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a firm believer that, yeah, there might be a short-term benefit, but you know what? In the long term, when your life is taken over by Jesus Christ and he grasps you and brings you into his family, life is not going to get easier. What did Christ say? Pick up your cross and follow me. Cross isn't exactly, a path most people want to walk. And when you consider the two great forces in this world that are battling each other, good and evil, evil's going to work on you more when you're not on its side, because otherwise it doesn't have to hurt you because you're already belonging to it. But when you belong to Christ, the evil of this world is going to work on you even more.
So anyway, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Pastor Bruce Osborne from St. John's Lutheran Church, Mattoon, Illinois. We're following up on a story that was printed in USA Today this morning, and it cites problems confronting congregations during this economic downturn. And we want to give you some examples of how some churches are responding in just a moment. But among 1,000 pastors who were asked about the effect of problems in the economy, 62% said they've had more requests for financial assistance from outside the congregation. 40% have members of their congregations who have lost jobs. 37% have increased spending from the church budget to help those who are in need. 31% have explored starting new ministries to aid the disadvantaged. 31% have had more requests for financial assistance from members of their congregation, and 27% have paid for more ministry items out of their own pocket than normal. Now, those are some of the bullet points. Now, let's give you some specifics about how some churches are responding. The Reverend Bill Ankerberg has seen it all at his Whittier Area Community Church east of L.A. The church gave more financial aid to folks in 1 month, $26,000, from the Benevolent Fund than it was asked to give in all of 1996, the year he came to Whittier, he says. Like 27% of pastors in the survey, Ankerberg has given personally, too. Last weekend, 1,100 of the Whittier area church's 1,800 adult members were signed up to help with more than 112 service projects in area schools, hospitals, homeless shelters, and other public sites. Now, there's that response, that faith in action that we were talking about. First Family Church in Overland Park, Kansas, called all 5,000 members to tell them about a special February Sunday worship service where people who had lost their jobs could come to be anointed with oil by Senior Pastor Jerry Johnston and his son, Jeremy, the executive pastor. He said, "We had 2,000 people, the largest worship service turnout of the year," so said the Reverend Jeremy Johnston. The worship team led the prayers while the dad and son stood in the aisles, and one after another, people came forward to be anointed and for prayer. He said it brought me to tears. First Family also has added ministries to support the unemployed, and next month we'll hold a baby shower for new mothers from 17 shelters in Kansas City. Now, does that send a message to the people that aren't regular churchgoers?
I sure hope it does. I sure hope it does. And I hope the message they are receiving is not that the church cares, but God cares.
Hmm.
God cares what you're going through, because the church is simply should simply be a reflector of God's love. We don't make up the love. The love comes from God, and we simply reflect that love to other people. And I pray that our communities and our world sees the church getting up and getting out to share this wonderful message of peace and hope that God has given to us as a church, as individuals, to share with other people.
Hmm. Meanwhile, you're familiar perhaps with Saddleback Church, Reverend Rick Warren's church in Southern California. News that breaks today and is posted on the ChristianPost.com website. Saddleback Church in Southern California trained nearly 2,400 new church members on Saturday. It was 2,400. Can you imagine that? It was the largest membership class in the megachurch's 30-year history. Of those who participated in the church's introductory membership session, Class 101, about 800 were baptized afterwards. Founding Pastor Rick Warren personally taught the program, and then, with the help of other Saddleback pastors, spent more than 3.5 hours baptizing the hundreds of new members. Attendees were walked through three areas in their faith life: God's plan and purpose for everything, the history, faith, and future vision of the church, and the importance of membership. During the session, Warren recognized that the class was taking place in the midst of economic hardships, but he said the church was created for these difficult times. Could you agree with that statement?
I think to say that the church was created to help in these kind of times, I think that's one of the reasons why the church is out there, because it's a tangible thing that we can say, you know what, something goes on there that I don't know anything about if you were that non-Christian. And it is a tangible thing. It's the bride of Christ, and we know that, boy, you know, something cool happens in church.
And it's a bit temporal, because really the church was created for the eternal, wasn't it, for our afterlife?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the church is not there to really share just a message of hope here on earth. Because I think Paul, the other Paul, St. Paul, said something about that when he said, you know, if the hope that we have is only for this life, we should be pitied more than all men. It's really not just hope to get through this this recession. It's the hope to get through the eternal depression that Satan wants to bring upon all of us, and that sin does bring upon all of us in hell.
And Rick Warren also stated that everyone needs to find a church home. He said, and I quote, "A Christian without a church home is an orphan." He said, "We aren't in competition with any church. We want every church to grow."
And I would say praise the Lord for that. I think there are a couple of ways to look at it. There are while theologically speaking, I do not agree with what other churches teach. And I can simply illustrate that this way. I'm a Lutheran pastor. If I didn't agree with what the Lutheran Church teaches, I would have a responsibility to go somewhere else.
There has to be a distinction. You have to have something to stand on.
Exactly. And so if those churches stand for what they believe, you know, I don't want to get into a discussion on all of the ins and outs about what's right, what's wrong. But I think Satan intended the divide and conquer mentality when all of these denominations came up and everybody started splitting, and, you know, every little church on every street corner started splitting into two little churches because, you know, somebody didn't like this organ player and somebody liked the other one, and so we're going to start a new church. And so, you know, while the discord is very evident in our church bodies, I think sometimes then God takes that and says, but you know what? Let's have everybody get a few more people. Let's have this person find this church and this person find this church. And so it's an opportunity for growth as well. So sometimes divide and conquer, what Satan intended for bad, God does intend for good.
Phones open, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's go back to something that you said very early in the broadcast today that kind of stuck in my mind, and perhaps now we can unpack it a little bit. You said that in your community of Mattoon, there at St. John's, people still respect the church.
Mm-hmm.
You mean they don't in the big cities?
Well,
They don't on the coasts? Or what do you mean?
Well, what I mean is there is a movement, or a feeling in our country, that churches have had their time, they've had their place, and they kind of get a little bit disrespected.
Mm.
I still live in a community, and maybe this is a Midwestern thing too, where pastors, Christians, churches are still respected and seen as vital and vibrant parts of a community.
So you perceive that the community there holds you in high regard.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. I am very well respected in our community.
And are the traditions of the church well respected as well? Like Lent, like Lenten worship.
Our congregation, I cannot get over how well attended our midweek services are. I mean, I'm just going to throw a number at you, and you know, I'm not trying to just throw a number, but I'm going to use it as an example. We average almost 400 people at midweek Lenten worships.
Mm.
I mean, that's a huge number. When you consider we worship 600 on a Sunday, I mean, it's one of those things that this community and this congregation of believers sees Wednesday services as an important part of both Advent, that preparatory season for Christmas, and Lent, the preparatory season for Easter. They see those as a wonderful opportunity for growth. It always saddens me when I hear about these other congregations who have been forced to cancel them or things like that. Now, I think part of that is something that is instilled in the people of this congregation.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, our community and many of the other local churches get together and they have a community Monday, Thursday, and a community Good Friday service. And those are wonderful opportunities for people of maybe some more of a common faith to get together.
Mm-hmm.
But there are usually about 8 or 10 churches that get together and do a joint Monday, Thursday, and a joint Good Friday service. I always think it warms my heart to know that every year those services are fairly well attended, but our congregation on its own worships more in our Monday, Thursday, and in our Good Friday services than those 10 churches combined do.
When our little family began, we were living in a community of 5,000 where the claim to fame was great water and a good place to raise a family. Could it be that in Mattoon there's fewer distractions, and because of that, people can be more engaged in the church community, are more apt to be engaged in the church community?
I think we would dilute ourselves, to keep your water theme going, to think that isn't a part of it. I think you're exactly right. You know, we live in a community where, you know, our downtown, as of about 6 o'clock, I think I see the sidewalks begin to roll up.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. You know, where high school sports are still viewed with love and passion, and where, you know, people see churches, and there's this pull that, wow, you know, that's what makes our community great. And so I think there are a few less distractions. Therefore, you know, I think people are more willing to come out and participate.
Life in the fast lane can seem so sophisticated, but yet it can be a hindrance to your walk.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know that when you become active, there are going to be 10 other things that are going to try to pull you away from what is truly important.
So there still is a touch of that Norman Rockwell America out there?
Yes, I think there is, brother. I think there is. And I'm going to say this with all the humility I can. I'm living it, and I love it. I'll tell you.
In these closing minutes, just a couple left, as we get closer to Easter, and any thoughts this Lenten season you'd like to share with us?
Well, I'm doing a series that I purchased through our beloved Concordia Publishing House, based on the hymn, O Sacred Head, Now Wounded. And we're talking each week about these different wounds. And what a beautiful series that is, talking about the wounds of betrayal that Judas inflicted upon Christ, and the wounds of mockery that those soldiers, after he was scourged and they put that purple robe on him and that crown of thorns and gave him that staff and mocked him, calling him King of the Jews, bowing down before him. And this series has done a beautiful job of relating how we see ourselves in each of those people. What a neat opportunity for us to remind ourselves of the wounds that we too have caused Christ, but never forgetting it, as deep as we might then find ourselves in our own despair, the beautiful thing is, you know, to quote Paul Harvey, we know the rest of the story. You know, we know that it doesn't end with that despair on Good Friday. And that's what I want each person to know in this world. When you begin to despair to the point of darkness and you can't see a way out, boy, there is a light, and we've got that light of Christ, and that's what we need to share with people is, yes, Lent is a time for us to focus on some of these things, but you know what? Every Sunday is that little Easter that we've got to remember to share with people. We have to focus on our sin at times, yes, but we see our sin for the goal of that we can see our Savior.
And we're approaching what could be called the second harvest, because here's why. Findings show that Americans are most likely to be open to consider matters of faith during the Christmas holiday season, 47%, and Easter season, 38%. You could look at it as another harvest season.
That's exactly right, because this is, no matter how much the world tries, the bunny can never trump the empty tomb.
I like that. Very good. Pastor Bruce Osborne, we thank you for being with us today on the Bible study.
It has been a blessing, Paul. Thank you very much.
Bruce Osborne, St. John's Lutheran Church in Mattoon, Illinois. Let me check the schedule and see who the Ask the Pastor guest will be tomorrow on the Bible study. Let's see what we've got here. Pastor Don Moore from Florida on Ask the Pastor tomorrow. It's a pleasure sitting in for Chuck Rathard. I'm Paul Clayton. Stay tuned for Pastor Mark Hawkinson and Moments of Assurance.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.